All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, March 21st. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Second take is always the better one. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started to keep winning on FanDuel or DraftKings. You can head over to the site, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system. That's powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. It's going to give you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. NBA has base projections for NHL, and we'll have optimal lineups for MLB starting in just a couple weeks. So getting excited, a lot going on, busy time of year. You can check that out free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. You're all good to go. Buddy, I'm a little punchy today. I'm just got off a red-eye flight. 3 hours of sleep, 2 cups of coffee. Let's talk
about Mexico.
What's that?
Were you out in Mexico again?
No, you know, that's like the running joke around here that we would go to not doing it. I'm not even going to get into that one. No, coming from Colorado, where I was actually meeting with our Blake Pender, our partner here and owner of Lineup Lab, getting ready for baseball season. So a productive week away. Not really away, but a productive week. But now I'm a little jittery and wanted to talk about Russell Westbrook. We were texting back and forth last night about, you know, Westbrook was the guy that we kind of not were hesitant on, but
it was a last minute call. He wasn't in the optimal lineup, and we tweaked a knob,
right,
ever so slightly to put him in the top. And explain our reasoning before we get into it.
Okay, so we get caught sometimes in the, you know, Westbrook is. We had a very high projection for him, as most people will. He's the best fantasy player in the NBA. So it's not like everyone's going to just have some kind of like low, crazy, weird projection for him. The problem at this point is price, right? So you get caught into this idea of, is he worth it, quote, worth it for the price? And is he worth it for the price based on the other value that is available on the slate? So yesterday offered this weird sort of, you know, you get this every once in a while, but this opportunity to sort of overpay for a guy like Westbrook because you had, Taurean Prince and Rashawn Holmes and Ersan Ilyasova, just these very cheap plays that we're going to stand to see pretty high floors considering the way their teams were going to deploy them. And then at that point, we say to ourselves, well, is this the chalk you want to fade, right? Because, And I think that is that's one of the harder positions to be in DFS, both as a provider not necessarily a lineup provider, but a provider of projections, and just the way the lineups are going to get made up, you can kind of get caught in a weird spot. So you say to yourself, do I want to be on the wrong side of the Westbrook chalk or the right side? And it was really close for us. We ended up going with him. He stunk. And we just kind of went back and forth and said, should we have trusted our overall process a little more that would have meant a fade? Does that sum it up like kind of where our thoughts were?
Yeah, I think pretty well. I mean, so the big discussion last night was around, well, there were two major factors, I think, that drove Westbrook's inclusion in the ultimate lineup. And I think,
by the way, this is just on FanDuel. We did not have him or Harden on DraftKings. And DraftKings, where we did less tweaking, ended up being great. I mean, that was going 10x.
And FanDuel was fine, too. We cashed FanDuel with Westbrook.
Well, correct,
so,
right.
You know, no big deal. But I think it's just from a process standpoint, it's worth looking at. Because the big discussion we had last night was surrounding, first of all, his overall ownership percentage and trying to figure out, you know, on FanDuel, where the pricing is a lot less difficult to figure out, we figured that he would be a very high-owned player, and we're wondering if we should just, you know, take him with 80% of the field and just kind of outbuild them in the rest of the lineups. And so that's what we wind up doing, and it wound up being correct in terms of his projected ownership percentage. But I think more interesting was our discussion around his perceived floor, right? Because I think one of the things we landed on last night was looking at his recent game log, looking at kind of who he is as a player, and declaring that, okay, well, this is a guy who has a high enough floor that it'd be hard for him to kill us, right? But the thing about a $13,400 price tag is your brain is going to play tricks on you when you look for a floor, because you see something like 53 fantasy points and you're like, man, if he scores his 53 fantasy points, like, whatever, like, how bad could that be? The thing is, it's really bad. Like, 53 fantasy points on 13-4 is putting you on pace for about a 240 cash game line. And sure, you're taking payoffs elsewhere, so you're figuring that your Tabas Cephalosias and Richard Holmes or Rashawn Holmes are going to make up the difference somewhere. But if you can not get 4x on your 13-4, well, that's pretty darn good as well. And so we had him projected originally, I think, for around 61 fantasy points, bumped him up to around 63, 64 to get him into the optimal lineup. And there were some reasons, you know, Golden State plays fast. It wasn't like strictly subjective, but I think really the assumptions around, and I think the other thing is too, when you're running a business like ours, sometimes a tiebreaker can be, will people just be mad if they don't see Westbrook in the lineup? Sure. And he's 80% owned and winds up being good. And, you know, I think that's reasonable too. But yeah, I don't know. From a process standpoint, I do think that we need to be more careful about reevaluating what floor means on over a $13,000 salary.
Yeah, I agree with that. And like I said, last night was one of those weird things. Maybe we can cut this off in a second here. But it's one of those weird things where we looked at just like the way the rest of the things were shaking out, and nothing was feeling particularly great. And then at that point, you're like, well, let's just be on the right side of the chalk maybe. And yeah, he doesn't get there. The game turned into a blowout way earlier than anyone really expected it to. And yeah, you move on and you just learn from it. Like, we just try to, even in the moment, we're trying to evaluate, like, was our process good? Let's talk about tonight's games. 8 games going on in the NBA tonight. Some injury stuff hanging out there, although not a ton, considering there are, it's not a very short slate, but just not a ton of injury stuff. Let's start with Toronto and Chicago. Still no Dwayne Wade. Chicago's a total mess. Is Butler, although, I mean, and Butler's been fine, but I'm not sure. Do you see him as just like not a must-have in cash, but like the way they're Chicago's still kind of using him? Do you see him as just? Do you see him as a high floor play? I guess, you know, coming off that Westbrook discussion.
Yeah, I do. I mean, back-to-back games now with 45 fantasy points, including one of those against Utah, who's the absolute worst, stone cold worst matchup for opposing small forwards from a fantasy perspective this season. I do think Butler. I mean, you know, historically throughout the season, he's put up something like 30% more usage, you know, relative to his own usage when Wade's been out of the lineup. While we've talked about how that's probably not sustainable over the course of the season, he's still basically priced the same way he was when Wade was totally healthy. I think we're getting ready for some kind of huge Butler performance. I don't think that comes tonight against Toronto. They're, you know, the fifth worst matchup basically for opposing small forwards, but I think he's just kind of a must play until either the price corrects or we learn more about his new normal and it's something much less than we all expect. So yeah, I think I you know, I hate the term must play, but I do think that he will be heavily owned in cash games tonight, and for good reason.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm with you on the price. It just hasn't really moved enough. The Bulls don't have any incentive. I mean, they have incentive to just at least continue to try to win at this point. For the playoffs, I don't think it's particularly likely for them, but they do need to try even with this kind of garbage squad, not even kind of garbage, very garbage squad that they're trotting out there on a game-to-game basis that actually just kind of switches around all the time based on who had a good game the game before. So it's like, if you had a good game the game before, there's a good chance that you're going to start the next game. But if you're not good that game, you're headed back to the bench, pal, except for Butler. Everything else seems to be just sort of a revolving door of losers. What about the Toronto side? Guys like DeRozan, I mean, Corey Joseph, Serge Ibaka was decent last game. Anything there, you know, standing out to you?
Yeah, not especially. I mean, it's very weird trying to figure out, you know, the Corey Joseph. First of all, just weird to try to figure out what the projected minutes should be for these guys, because they've been kind of all over the place. They've been giving PJ Tucker a ton of run from time to time. The power forward situation with Ibaka, yeah, sometimes he plays a lot of minutes, sometimes he plays 30. So Valanciunas is down to low 20s minutes per game. Joffrey LeVern is kind of just stealing random people's minutes. Toronto's kind of all over the place. They're not as bad as Chicago in that regard, but the problem is, since they used to be good and kind of together, it's the reverse situation where everyone is still priced to like when they were good all the time. So like DeMar DeRozan, for instance, who was a lock for 37 to 39 minutes a game for quite a long stretch, is now not top 36 minutes in a week and been bad in every single game on this price since then. So yeah, while Chicago's not been terrific, I just don't know that Toronto's really where you want to land until we get a better sense of, you know, where all the minutes are going to go, what the real plan is going forward.
I just think they're a pretty deep team now, and they don't need, you know, adding Ibaka, adding Tucker, I think they're just deeper across the board, and they just don't need to run guys tons and tons of minutes anymore. So I think that's where you just see, I don't think it ever really shakes itself out. I think you're just kind of always going to be in a state of just, you know, wondering who's going to get those, you know, power, you know, three small ball four minutes, guys like Tucker and Patterson and Carroll, all those guys. I don't think we're ever going to really know.
I think it's just more that they haven't played a normal game in a week. Like, they lost, or they beat Indiana by 25. They lost to Detroit by 12. They had a 21-point spread in Oklahoma City, 22 points in Dallas, 15 points Miami. Like, they just haven't been able to play in a close game in a week. And given that, you know, the roster has been in so much flux, I just think we don't totally know what the plan is. So I think that it will shake out, actually. I just think that we don't know at this moment. And for me, that just makes it a stay away until I can get more information.
Yeah, I'm with you. Whenever the Nets play, we want to target the team playing against them tonight. That's Detroit. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on, well, you know, you wrote up the article last night. Andre Drummond is featured dunking on the front page of our website right now. So I assume that
Yeah.
you like him. Didn't read the article too long.
Not just he was the only player in the article. We had an image up for on file, and I was too lazy to go get him.
So let's okay. So he does he end up becoming? Do you think he ends up becoming sort of like a chalk center play? He's not that expensive, and the Nets are obviously the very best matchup you can have in DFS. Do you see kind of not an every lineup guy, but I mean pretty far up there considering the upside that he has just from a rebounding and scoring standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, he'll be in most of our lineups, I assume. Players like this are always tough for me to evaluate how that industry at large feels because Drummond is not your classic safe player in the same way a guy like Marcus Gasol is, for instance. He plays random minutes sometimes, like 28, like because he's weird because every good player has this inherent risk around blowouts, right? If a blowout happens, they'll probably lose their minutes, and since they're so high priced, losing 4 minutes on Russell Westbrook means a lot more than losing 4 minutes on Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, But with Drummond, it's kind of weird because he'll also lose minutes just because the other team decides to foul him late in the game or because of foul trouble. Like he's got these other random contingencies as well. That being said, they haven't really mattered recently very much. Like he was tremendous against Phoenix in spite of only playing 28 minutes. He went 18-18 against them. He went 8-22 against Toronto in the game prior to that. And then had two bad games before that against Utah and Cleveland. So, and that was before having great games against the Knicks in Cleveland. You just kind of don't know what you're going to get from him on a night-to-night basis. That being said, Brooklyn, it stands to reason that Brooklyn is about as safe a matchup for him as possible. While Brook Lopez does present potential foul trouble issues, they just play such a fast pace, and the increase in possessions for a guy who's already topping 14, 15 rebounds on the regular, I just think he's a The upside is just completely ridiculous. It's so much higher than a guy like Gasol that you're getting for the same price. And if you can weather, the off chance that he has one of those Utah games where he only plays 20 minutes, I think that you'll be happy with him in cash game lineups.
I think you're probably staring down the idea of having, like, at least on FanDuel, probably at least three Pistons, considering their
Yeah.
prices. Now they're a
It's
little.
tricky, man. Their minutes are all over the place too.
Well, this is the guy I want to ask you about. So Reggie Jackson, right now, I mean, we have
Yeah.
him at 20. I think it's
29
29
minutes, I
minutes.
think. Yeah.
He is, that guy hasn't played 29 minutes in forever, but they've also had a bunch of weird game scripts. So, like, he's played 24, 27, 20, 20, and then you have to go back to March 11th for
And
him to
those were the
deliver.
normal games, yeah.
Right. So, where do
I
you
had
go?
trouble pinning this down. I mean, I don't see any fundamental reason why Reggie Jackson should be losing his minutes. Like, and for that reason, I'm happy to continue to leave him at the 29 number. Because, like, we often talk about when we're doing the minutes, sometimes we'll do a sanity check with one another and be like, did we learn anything from this last game? And when we ask each other that question, what we're saying is, like, the Phoenix game was decided by 17 points. Like, is it good practice to adjust our expectations based on something that happened over 17, a 17-point game? Okay, no. Well, how about the 32-point game they played against Cleveland? How about the 20-point game they played against the Knicks? Like, so at some point, you just start running out of steam on trying to figure out, whose minutes are supposed to go where. They had a random game against Utah, where as a team, they only scored 83 points. And of course, like, their coach is going to get fed up and just start putting essentially random guys in the lineup. So I don't know what to make of them. Again, I have to think that the Brooklyn matchup is the one where these guys have some sense of normalcy and go out and play their minutes. Now, they could just go out and kill Brooklyn and then it all goes out the window. But I do think that Jackson in particular, I mean, the guy's 5,000. If he plays 30 minutes, like, he just seems like a lock for 6X on this price. I don't know. I mean, maybe you just don't wind up feeling great about it. I think you're going to be in a position where you might want to play four Pistons. Maybe he's the one you wind up leaving off. I just think, and point guard's not especially great or deep tonight. I just think it's probably worth the risk. I know people aren't going to want to see the name, and they're not going to want to see any of these names. Marcus Morris, John Lohr, none of these. Tobias Harris, like, all these guys have been playing completely insane minutes and insane game scripts. But I feel like if there's a night to try to catch a falling knife, tonight would be it.
Yeah, I think that's where it was the piece about just the state of the point guard position in general is where I'm just happy to just run Jackson out there, right? So the other options outside of Ulis, who is probably, again,
You'll also be in all lineups, yeah.
yeah, I or at least for us, it will be interesting to see how people evaluate his rapid price increase. But we'll get to him in a minute. But we're
They always evaluate it poorly. I mean, people will just wind up playing him until he has a bad game, and Yeah, we're in the same boat at the moment.
So if you had to pick right now, from a safety perspective, like you just the player, they're at the same price, safe where you can trust their minutes and maybe their relative output, Reggie Jackson or Corey Joseph on FanDuel?
I'd take Reggie Jackson. I mean, they've both been playing crazy minutes, and I just think Reggie Jackson has higher upside.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, too. I think it's going to be a situation where it's like Jackson, KCP, and then one Drummond, and then maybe a fourth Piston in cash game. The matchup's just too good. Vegas does not see it.
And it's not going to feel great, and I don't envy you the task of being on in the chat tonight trying to answer those questions.
Yeah, actually, to me, it doesn't feel...
how steady a hand to keep, you know?
It doesn't feel that bad for me, actually. I understand what you're saying, because you're worried. Like, we're worried a little bit about some of these guys' like just overall run. The matchup to me is just too good, and just looking at the Detroit prices in general, I actually don't feel that bad about it. So, and also, there just aren't a ton of other great matchups on the board, making Brooklyn just stand out so much more than everybody else. That, yeah, I guess maybe some people.
Well, it's this weird combination of, you know, converging factors where the Pistons have been on this very weird run of weird minutes, and they're running up against the best possible matchup. Like, I feel like the system would be tentatively interested even if this was a not so good matchup, and so, you know, given that Detroit's projected for 105 points tonight, like that's just going to be enough oftentimes to get their guys in the system if no guy is over 5400 except Andre Drummond. Like that's just kind of crazy.
Moving into, well, and by the way, Brooklyn side of the ball, I guess Jeremy Lin is doubtful or at least questionable. Even if he were to not play, now they're without Kilpatrick, they're without Lin, they're without Joe Harris. That's a lot of their backcourt. I know, obviously, this team.
Yeah, he's the guy in that stretch for me. I mean, he played 30 minutes against Dallas. He was great, scored 32 fantasy points. Really, the uptick in assists is what I'm looking at for him, because he's a guy, like when he goes out there and plays with the first unit and Jeremy Lin or another primary ball handlers on the court, he just won't have the ball in his hands very much, but the combination of the 18 points and the four assists is so outside of the norm for him that I think that's just kind of his role when he moves into the starting lineup, and I'd be thrilled to play him if Lin wind up sitting tonight.
Yeah, and I think that'll be the case. We're still a little bit low on the Nets minutes and probably just overall output, so that'll be something I take a look at when we jump off the air. After this, it's Miami and the Suns. Deion Waiters is out indefinitely for Phoenix. We saw Dragic as a total chalk play last game out, or the first game without Waiters. He was something like 75% start when they played Portland. We actually faded him in that game in favor of Rubio, which had me a little on edge going into it, and then ended up being correct in the sense that it worked out. Not sure actually how correct it was, except the final output suggested it was. But he did play 38 minutes against Portland. Without Waiters, Dragic definitely gets a usage bump, and there's a couple other guys that do as well. Do you think he's up to 8,200? Phoenix is a great matchup, really, just for about anybody. Do you think that his ownership percentages trend up into that region again with the idea that our system is just not really that high on
him? It's tough. I mean, when you look at a guy like Dragic, he really there's been two games recently where he's been an $8,000 player and really no other games where he's posted totals like that. So, you know, which Dragic do you trust, I guess? You know, even when he played a ton of minutes against Phoenix, or Portland rather, another pretty good matchup, he didn't wind up paying this price. So, yeah, I think he's a good play. He's totally fine. I just don't know if this is really where you want to try and take your big payoff. Like, yeah, no Waiters makes a difference. His usage is going to go up. He's going to have the ball in his hands more. And he's just, his baseline is just not an $8,000 player. So be thrilled to play him at 7,500. I just don't know that 8,200. 8,200 is more, he's a guy who fits in if the salary works around him, than a guy I'm going to like prioritize and be concerned if he's not in the lineup, you know?
He's not a comp for Westbrook, obviously, like just on a skill level. I'm not going on a limb by saying that at all. But from a process standpoint, it is going to be a situation, I think, similar to last night where I think the idea is going to be that he's going to be a chalk play again. It would take almost, I would say, I think a Herculean effort to really boost him into top lineups. If you thought, especially too, they're 12-point favorites right now, so there's probably a little bit of a blowout risk as well. So Dragic is going to be the one where kind of have like that road to Damascus moment tonight about whether or not it's correct to take him all the way up to, you know, 38 minutes and feel safe on that. And actually, that might not even totally get him there in our system. The other guy that really
Is the weird thing. I mean, if you think he's going to be uber chalk, I do think the floor on Dragic tonight, and we're repeating our conversation from last night,
right,
I do think the floor on Dragic is pretty high with no Waiters, particularly in such a good matchup in a hashtag revenge game. Like, I actually do think he's got plenty of floor. I think the narrative is going to drive huge ownership percentage on him. And I think there's just a lot of other, like, fine options that are cheaper, too. So, like, I think all things being equal, I wouldn't mind Dragic in the ultimate lineup. But I just don't. Like, I personally wouldn't be compelled to force it either. So
James Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, if you think 38 minutes is the right number, then he's a much better play, too. Just all the devil's going to be in the details there.
James Johnson's the other guy who's seen just an up. He sees a pretty dramatic uptick in usage, and his minutes floor actually raises a little bit without Waiters. He's coming off a huge game. He went 24-7-5 with some blocks and steals for roughly around 48 fantasy points. Do you see him as coming in as a chalk play at power forward? I'm obviously still coming in off the bench, but when you eliminate Waiters from the discussion, it does open up a little bit more safety in his minutes.
Yeah, I really like James Johnson tonight, actually. And, you know, when we're talking about guys being on the chopping block and, or trying to get certain guys into the lineup or other guys out, I really wouldn't mind seeing him in the lineup over Tobias Harris at 5,400, for instance. Like, it seems, I get where the system is coming from here, giving them both essentially the same projection, but in terms of who's going to be owned and who isn't going to be owned, I would rather take the more conservative projection on Johnson rather than the more bullish projection on Harris. But yeah, it's going to be, you're going to need to do give the system a stern talking to, because right now they're in full on go Pistons mode.
So. Yeah, it's interesting with Johnson too, because whenever you have a guy that comes in off the bench, you need a lot of things to go right in the game for that guy to hit huge minute upside. So while
or almost things not to go wrong, right?
Right, exactly. So with Johnson, he's clearly just a better fantasy player than Tobias Harris. But Tobias Harris is almost more likely to hit like 35 to 36 minutes, only because he's going to start the game on the court. Like when Johnson's going to sit the first, you know, 6 minutes of the game, or I can't remember his exact rotation, but it's something like that. Now he does play crunch time for them, but now you need to get to crunch time, right? So like you need to sort of make sure that game stays close for him to see like really crazy high minutes, because he's just going to lop off the first 6 minutes of the game by just definitely not playing. So that's the only thing that concerns the only thing that concerns me on him, and I fully recognize that he will be a very popular play.
Phoenix, yeah, and with Harris, you can trust the minutes. Like he, even in spite of the team playing kind of wonky minutes recently, he's played 34 and 33, but the production hasn't been there, right? And so, you know, the thing that Detroit's really testing us right now is, what is a significant sample size? Is it the last four games where Harris has been a disappointment on these prices? Or is it the five games prior where he would have been, you'd be thrilled with the production, 6x or better? I mean, he scored 48 fantasy points against the Knicks on March 11th. Like, it's not like he's terrible, but the short memory of the DFS community is such that he's going to feel much worse just based on the last four games. So it's a tough spot for sure.
Yeah, there's a couple close decisions tonight, which is going to make it a pretty interesting one. But I think they're really going to mostly revolve around these two games, because there's some other just pretty overall tough matchups in here. After on the Phoenix side of the ball, they're pretty big underdogs. They are without basically their whole backcourt. Devin Booker is questionable. We know the Bledsoe and Knight are already out. Do you think Ulis just continues to see 40 minutes a game, and we can just kind of put that on lock going forward? Like, Ronnie Price is questionable too. Like, I don't even know who they have to totally just dribble the ball to the court at this point for Phoenix.
Yeah, I think Ulis will wind up being chalk. I mean, it's tough to say. We now have a lot of guys that are in the chalk, who have chalk candidacy. So maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong there. But yeah, Ulis, it's really hard to imagine him playing less minutes now. He's playing those minutes regardless of the game script, regardless of the opponent. Miami is about as bad a matchup as you could hope for, and it still hasn't mattered. Like, Detroit wasn't a good matchup his last time around. He scored 41 fantasy points. I think he's just a good play. And when you're starting to roll off the list here, you got Ulis, you got Dragic, you have cheap guys like Dinwiddie, Reggie Jackson. Like, there's all at once a ton of options, none of whom are totally free of question marks.
Right.
So it's kind of the worst possible night in that regard. Like, you know, there's a Conley later on we'll talk about.
We'll go into Conley right now, because that's the next game, okay. Is Memphis and New Orleans. The game is projected to stay pretty close. Memphis or New Orleans is a -2 favorite. They're at home. I'm sure that's the only reason is they're at home. Conley is, I saw a brief, I was kind of skimming your article last night, and I saw Conley 8,000, and then I saw the word 8,000 again. Do you think Conley is he just like a real value $8,000 player going forward at this point, based on Memphis pretty much like wanting to continue to win down the stretch here? Is he going to continue to see big minutes, and is he worth it at this price?
Oh, I think so. I mean, Conley's been terrific in the last month or so. I talked about this in the article kind of extensively, but and you can go check it out over at DFSR.com if you want to take a look at it. But he's been tremendous recently, both from a fantasy perspective, but the underlying peripherals are there as well. You know, a stat I like to key in on is the SportView data stat time of possession. And, you know, you can get that just easily over at stats.nba.com/tracking. So Conley's tracking data shows that from, I think going into, yeah, okay, so going into February, he was on 6.9 minutes of time of possession per game. Just to give you a frame of reference, that's like kind of league average for starting point guards. Since February's began, he's been up over 7.6 minutes per game. And that 10% extra time just with the ball in his hands has paid dividends in terms of both points and assists. Let's see here. So since February began, he's topped 40 fantasy points 8 times. And that's just a great number on an 8,200. And given that he's up against New Orleans tonight, the second best matchup for opposing point guards in the league, he just seems like he's actually the point guard with the fewest question marks out of any of these guys for me. His question mark is, of course, price. But if you just go off consistent recent performance, like I'm talking over the last month or so, he's the guy I would be least concerned about showing up in optimal lineups.
So he makes an interesting case too, because he and Dragic are the same price on FanDuel. And
yeah, I would take Conley in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and right, and that's where I think we probably our system and just the players out there, if you want to get separation, I think you get separation in the same exact. Assume that, you know, every player made the same exact lineup, you would get separation just on that decision alone, right? Just because you can do everything else the same. And just swap in the guy that you know will be lesser owned. Like Conley is just an unsexy pick when it comes to DFS. There are certain guys
that people are just going to play Dragic over Conley, not even think twice about it.
Definitely. Definitely. I actually don't even think it's that close. I think the decision is close in terms of just overall projection. I think in people's minds, it's not that close. Just judging off like how people viewed Dragic the last time, I know it was a little bit disappointing, the matchup. And again, Conley falls into this category of guys sort of like, it's like the George Hill category, right? It's just like, I just don't want to think that the guy is ever going to be worth it at his price, right? Like, so George Hill is 5,900 or 6,000 last night. I wrote him up. People go crazy because it's a terrible pick, and he's just 5X, and because he's in a good matchup, and this is what happens to him in close games. I get why they don't like him. It's just not, he's just not a popular DFS guy. I view Conley sort of the same way. And I think if you're holding those two guys side by side, the average, even maybe above average DFS player is going to just instantly pick Dragic over Conley. I'm not saying it's correct. I think it's a lot closer. And I actually think Conley has a ton of upside considering the game could stay close. He's probably going to play a lot of minutes. And I just like that one-to-one swap. The other guys in this game, I mean, Tony Allen, Marc Gasol, what do you think about Memphis side? New Orleans is not a great defense, though. They don't play totally fast, so you don't get a ton of points upside on them. But do you like anyone else on the Grizzlies side?
Yeah, I think all the Grizzlies are kind of in consideration. Vince Carter is going to be in consideration tonight. He just remains at 3,700 in spite of playing 30 minutes a game right now. We've seen incredible upside out of him, like in his first game as a starter, and some big-time downside too. Tony Allen falls in this category as well. He's kind of like the Andre Drummond of shooting guards, where he'll just like gain and lose minutes for apparently no reason whatsoever. Always kind of hard to trust, but the upside is very real. Not a guy anyone ever wants to put in their cash game lineups, probably for good reason. Gasol, to me, he's kind of like the unsexy version of Andre Drummond in that this is a fair price for him. They're both essentially the same price. It's another decision people are going to have to make going in, except you get fewer of the really bad games out of Gasol. Like in his recent game log, really only the Atlanta game on the 11th was the bad one. And then, but you also get fewer of those really big time games too. So, you know, if cash games are your thing, maybe you take him here. I do think it's a little dicey because the defense first position stats with Boogie on New Orleans really haven't totally shaken out just yet. Mm-hmm. We're still, like, if people could imagine for a moment, right now we have very good defense first position stats across the league. But imagine that there was one team that had only played 6 games or something. Like, we wouldn't trust their DVP stats nearly as much. So that's kind of where we are, trying to wade through this new normal for New Orleans as well. I think all things being equal, the pace of play probably just makes Gasol a good play. But I'm a little less confident in that than I would be if they didn't have just like a brand new, really good defensive center on their team. So, yeah, all the Memphis guys, rather, are in play. The only one I feel like phenomenal about probably is Conley.
And just remember that standings at this point of the season do matter for these teams. Memphis, OKC, and the Clippers are sort of in this dogfight to not play the Warriors, Spurs, or maybe even the Rockets. Like, they're all that group is kind of fighting it out to probably play the Jazz in the first round, and that is a significant thing at this point when they're all locked into their playoff spots, and now they are just playing for seeding. And I guarantee they care. You do not want to play those top tier teams. So getting big minutes floors out of guys like Conley, Gasol, and really just all of their starters, I think is completely on the table. Do we just knock New Orleans off the consideration, at least for cash games tonight, just because it's Memphis and they're slow and you're just really not getting a ton of upset on the pace?
Yeah, you touched on all the major points. I mean, throw in their inconsistency with a bad matchup with Memphis and there's just no reason to touch it.
Before we hit the 8:30 games, tell everyone a little bit about Fantasy Factor.
Yeah, Fantasy Factor is a partner of ours here at DFSR. They run great fantasy contests, NBA and NHL right now, coming up on MLB season. They're coming up for this next month. I know that they're going to be running every day $1 free rolls over there, so you can go over, get a little taste of what it's like to play on Fantasy Factor, interact with their pretty slick software, get used to their pricing systems and their system, decide if you want to make a deposit. If you do, you can use promo code DFSR to get a $5 bonus when you sign up that you can put right into play playing contests. You can also keep an eye out for their bigger between $10 and $50 free rolls every Friday for the NBA and NHL. So fantasyfactor.com, promo code DFSR. Hope to see you over there.
8:30 game is I lost it for a second. Yep, Golden State and Dallas. I was looking at Golden State's record real quick. Golden State and Dallas. Golden State's coming off a game which probably to them was a lot easier than they thought it was going to be last night against OKC. They really didn't have to put anything really anyone into play late in the game because it was well over by the time they hit the fourth. They play Dallas tonight. Dallas, as we know, is a slower team. This game is projected. This is it's funny. Vegas is catching on here to the Warriors. I think that they're just not as explosive. They're only -4 against Dallas, which obviously. Obviously, with Durant would not be the case, but this is where they are right now as a team. How do you view Golden State? Do you think the guys, they're coming on the back-to-back, they didn't have to play a ton of minutes last night, they don't totally need to keep winning here. They're 2.5 games up in the loss column over the Spurs. How do you view them as a team against just like a slower team in Dallas?
Yeah, not very favorably. Golden State's not even a team I'm really thrilled to play even in good matchups, just because their minutes are absolutely all over the place and it kind of doesn't matter who their opponent, like we talked about Steph Curry going to last night's lock because we were considering playing him on FanDuel as well. Like, he was basically in the lineup without Westbrook. And we went up and down his game log, and I was trying to figure out if there was a game where I'd be happy to play him on 10,000. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find one until I went all the way back to the Knicks game on the 5th. And even then, I was like barely getting away with anything at all. He's just not a $10,000 fantasy player with current lineup construction. Even with Kevin Durant out of the lineup, he's frequently playing 30 minutes or less just because they blow everybody out. While maybe they're not a favorite to kill Dallas at Dallas, the slow pace of Dallas and their just generally strong defensive makeup, I just don't see any point in playing any of these guys. The one guy I was actually looking at last night was Klay Thompson. And this was kind of like a DFSR baseball picks lineup thing where I was like, Klay Thompson, he's kind of interesting. Maybe an offbeat big tournament play or something like that. Then I looked up and he had scored 47 fantasy points in 32 minutes against Oklahoma City.
So. He just couldn't miss. Yeah, like he did.
Exactly. So some people are going to try and ride that hot hand. I think it's actually totally reasonable for big tournaments, but you're just not going to get nearly the separation you would have had he not just dropped 47. So yeah, it's he's a guy that's in play for me. Wouldn't be excited about it for cash games, but I'm not going to play any of the other guys in any format.
Dallas is right now from the playoff structure on the outside looking in, though they're not too far behind. They're only two games in the loss column behind the Nuggets for that eighth seed.
Oh, yeah, they'll play it out.
They would have to leapfrog the Blazers along the way, which is not an easy thing to do either. Do you think that you see big minutes out of these guys like Barnes, Dirk? Do you think Dallas is in the mode of now, like, this is a winnable game, it's at home? And or are we just going to play guys like Dirk and Barnes and maybe Seth Curry, bigger minutes in this game just because they want to win?
Yeah, I think Barnes is another guy. Like, you never feel excited to play him, but if you just take his season averages of 29 fantasy points a game and compare it to his $5,800 salary, it just shows you that he's pretty much just a good play on this price, almost regardless of opponent. Golden State, quite a bit worse with Durant off the court in terms of guarding opposing small forwards this season, playing the league's second fastest pace. I do think that's a good spot for him. If he winds up in optimal lineups, I'll feel a little iffy about it because I'm a little concerned about the blowout risk, but yeah, I just think it's hard to imagine him not getting his against his former team, too. It does matter to some degree, I think, for these teams, if nothing more than just a tiebreaker. I think Wes Matthews has some upside here. he's kind of worrisome because he comes and goes just like no one else, basically. Like he'll just score, like there's two recent games, a good example, 25 points and then 6 points against Philadelphia. Wouldn't be happy to play him in cash games, but certainly big tournament upside there. Outside of him, Dirk falls in that same category where it's really tough to imagine him topping 30 minutes and really going off. Could be steady, but probably not where you want to be for cash games with a potential game script. Overall, just kind of not that interesting a game, in case you can't discern that from my tone overall here.
No, I can discern it, baby. You said, did not.
Yeah, you can discern me like few can.
You did not sound pleased.
The discernment going on your side of the ball is quite considerable.
Heavy.
Let's put it that way.
Heavy discernment. the Spurs and the T-Wolves play the only 9:30 game. Right now, Kawhi is coming in at 9,400 into a lot of top lineups for us. Is that something you would feel comfortable with? Yeah, 64% of the lineups I ran right now do have Kawhi in them. Is that something you know, at this is 10:30 Eastern time, feel comfortable with, or is this something that maybe, I don't know, we might be a little high on him and we end up maybe paying up somewhere else?
Yeah, I feel like maybe something's changed in the projections from last night or something, because he wasn't showing up last night when I wrote the picks. I think Kawhi is interesting because he is the Spurs' go-to in both all facets of the game right now, and he was definitely sustaining these prices for a considerable amount of time in the beginning of the month. Kind of got dinged up, missed a couple of games, came back from that, had that electric performance against Portland where he put up 62 fantasy points, and has pretty much been a disappointment on these prices otherwise. I'm leaning toward him not being a $9,400 player. I don't think the matchup with Wiggins is particularly good whatsoever. I mean, he could just kill Wiggins. He killed Wiggins on the defensive end the last time they faced off, almost to like an awkward degree where it looked like Wiggins just wanted to quit playing basketball. But I don't know that that necessarily translates to huge fantasy performance tonight. I don't think it's a terrible play by any means. Like, you know, Minnesota, in spite of getting Tibbs, is still not defensive stalwarts necessarily. But yeah, it's a bottom 10 matchup for opposing small forwards. So I don't know. I'm not over the moon on it. How are you feeling?
It seems a little high. I'm just a little worried about the Spurs. Not to say that their fate is set in the second seed, but they're 2.5 games out now. The Rockets can't catch them. So that they're probably just in this decision-making process of, like, are the Warriors susceptible enough so that we can make up basically 3 games over the rest of the season?
Is it worth pushing things for, what, one more game of home court advantage in the playoffs? Like,
exactly. I'm just not sure. Spurs are pretty smart when it comes to this stuff. Like, they know... is there a big difference between facing the Grizzlies and the Nuggets? Now, where the Spurs probably do not want so the Spurs would not want to play the Thunder. They're hoping the Thunder continue to win and they can just play the Grizzlies in the first round. If that's not totally the case, and that probably would be the case to like just push the envelope to get the just to for sure get the Nuggets or whoever, if the Blazers or somebody like that, because the drop off from like the 7 to the 8 seed in the West is pretty significant. So anyway, this is all just kind of reading tea leaves and trying to figure out what a team plans to do. For Kawhi specifically, I'm with you. I think that 9,400 is a little bit steep, and it might just be one of those situations like there just aren't a lot of very expensive guys that you feel good paying up for tonight either. So
well, listen, if he was playing Brooklyn, it'd be a totally different story. But Minnesota's just not a good matchup. Like Wiggins is just a good defender. Last time they faced off, Wiggins actually played 44 minutes. So it's not like it's any secret that Minnesota knows what they need to do when these two teams square off. Interesting for Kawhi is that this was his peak game of the season when he played Minnesota last time around. So I do think a lot of people will play him if for that reason alone. I just don't know. Like, I don't know if it's wise or not. I don't know.
Another team fighting for a playoff seed here are the Trailblazers. They're -4 against the Bucks tonight. They're getting a little healthier with Evan Turner coming back now. I'm not sure like what a huge difference it makes for them as a team to have him on the court, though. I mean, just another guy that will take some shots. How do you view the Blazers side of the ball? It seems like to me the Blazers have become one of those teams that is just fairly priced when you come to Lillard and McCollum, just because they do play a lot of minutes and they're most of the offense. I guess Nurkic is in the mix as well. How do you view the Blazers here?
Yeah, I still think CJ McCollum's too cheap. I hear what you're saying in terms of the rest of the guys being fairly priced, but if you just look at McCollum's game log, like he's topping 5-6x on this price with regularity, which doesn't really have the hallmark of a guy who's fairly priced. Now he will sprinkle in some duds here and there.
That's when
no
I
question
play
about
him.
It.
Yeah, that's when I play him. That, so if
when
I,
you play him, right? Yeah.
So everyone's gonna want to just email me real. Yeah, just email me real quick and ask if I'm playing McCollum tonight. Because if I'm playing him, you're gonna want to stay away. But every other time, he seems to be pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm certain you played him in a phenomenal matchup against New Orleans when he went out there and scored 14 fantasy points.
So. Bingo, bango.
And that was, by the way, sandwiched between, just for the sake of my own sanity. So 6x plus against Washington, 5.5 against Phoenix, 2x against New Orleans, so that's not great. 5.5 against San Antonio, and 6x against Atlanta. So you're telling me that you only played him on that bad night, Doug? Seems unrealistic.
It's all I remember. So
factually accurate as well, probably. But yeah, I don't know. I think McCollum's still a good price when he gets a good matchup. I view Milwaukee as a pretty fine matchup for what his skill set brings to the table, kind of league average. But I think that McCollum is just, I don't know, 5 or 6% too cheap on this price. So it's not like you're crushing it playing McCollum tonight, but I would be okay with it. Like if he wound up in the optimal lineup, he's not a guy I would call you up and be like, McCollum, really? So I don't know if that test is worth anything for you. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Another guy people are going to look at without doubt is Nurkic. Our system isn't too bullish on Nurkic, but he's been really good in the last three games in kind of tough matchups too, like against San Antonio, against Dwight in Atlanta, and against Whiteside in Miami, and he's just been paying this price like it's going out of style. What's your take on Nurkic today?
Yeah, no, he's been really good. They seem like they just completely crushed this trade, to be honest. I mean, Mason Plumlee's been fine for the Nuggets too, I guess, but from a fantasy perspective, this is sort of what we've been waiting for Nurkic when he played on Denver, was just to play minutes and just to kind of just do all this stuff, just be sort of a double-double guy that can score. He can play defense, and or at least, okay, I always hesitate this, to make qualifications like this. He can play fantasy defense. I'm never totally positive these guys can actually play defense. I'm not really a total expert at like watching rotation.
It's hard to imagine that a guy who just is out there blocking 3 and 5 shots a game just isn't at least serviceable on defense, right? Like this is the part that drives me completely insane.
Right. Oh, to not be able to tell like what, like
yeah, how bad could he really be? Like he's out there and he's just what, like Enes Kanter now? He blocks 5 shots a game, but like, so 5 shots that were headed towards the basket don't even get a chance. They don't get to go there at all. And then just some other, well, there's like 6 opportunities that your random Mason Plumlee type would have taken care of. I just find that really hard to believe.
I will say that around, I'm not exactly sure when the trade happened, but the Blazers are 8-2 in their last 10. And so something is, they are, and this is what's making them have a push toward the playoffs. And not to say that Nurkic is the definitive reason why, but they've been winning in the short term. I like them getting a little bit expensive, though, and we've talked about some of the other just kind of big money centers that you can play here, like Drummond and Gasol as well. But Nurkic falls. If you're looking to save, Nurkic does seem like a way to go. What about Milwaukee side here? Giannis, Middleton, guys like this. Portland doesn't play particularly fast, but it's supposed to be a pretty close game with one of the higher overs of the evening.
Yeah, I think that you can. I mean, Giannis is going to be a guy who's on anyone's radar when he's in matchups like this. He's kind of he's a game time decision right now with his ankle situation that he tweaked on Saturday against the Warriors, rather. It's not even clear that he's going to play. If Giannis does wind up sitting tonight, you're going to see big usage just spread around across the rest of the team, making them all obviously quite a bit more interesting. If Giannis does play, the combination of the ankle thing and just recent completely lackluster performance on these prices has me really cold. Really hard to imagine paying $10,000 for a guy who hasn't topped 30 fantasy points in 3 of his last 4 games. You know, just one performance like that will just kill you outright. After him, you know, Middleton's price has gone up pretty dramatically. The center situation is very uncertain for me. There's just not really a lot else that I love about this team. Even the point guard situation, like Brogdon's been playing more, but Dellavedova is still lurking, still playing between 25 and 29 minutes a game. I just don't, yeah, there's just nothing else here I'm too interested in.
Final game on the slate is the Clippers and the Lakers. Now, this line is only Clippers by 8.5 right now. Do you think that Vegas line is suggesting that this is on the back-to-back for them, though they didn't have to go into the fourth last night against the Knicks because that was well over in the third quarter. Do you think the minus 8.5 is a testament that like the Lakers are sort of actually trying, like they hung with Cleveland for most of the game, last game? Is it that the Lakers are maybe friskier than we think, or do you think this suggests that maybe someone from the Clippers just doesn't play?
No, I think that, you know, maybe they just think that Lakers are friskier than we think, I guess. I don't know. It's always tough to know Vegas's motivation. You know, the Lakers are at home for this game, Doug, in the same building where the Clippers play their home game. So I'm sure that matters quite a bit. I guess they get their season ticket holders are at the game or something. Maybe that matters. But, you know, I think really the test, the gut check test for me tonight is going to be Blake, because I'll tell you right now that our system is going to be pretty enthusiastic about getting him in there against the Lakers in an excellent matchup. And he's only played 31 minutes in each of the last 2 games, but he's kind of back. Like, I mean, it doesn't look like it when he only scores 39 and 43 fantasy points on a $4,300 price tag, but considering he only played 31 minutes in each of those games, he just looks like a great play to me tonight. And he's a guy, this feels like the moment where you can just play Blake, and you're getting a huge discount to his fair value in this matchup, just based on kind of a bunch of randomness recently. He would be a guy I would be very, very excited to see in the optimals coming into lineup lockdown.
Well, he was just absolutely crushing Porzingis and, like, Hernan Gomez last night, and, like, especially, like, in pick and roll, and, like, they just were able to get him three-pointers. Like, I mean, he went 3-for-4 from three, which is going to be outside of his normal range.
Typical. Yeah.
But he was just – they had no real answer for him. I mean, they had the pick and roll going to the point where it looked like – I mean, the Knicks, I don't think they were trying to tank, but it kind of looked like they were tanking because they just had no clue what to do on defense. But I'm with you on Griffin. I think the system is going to have a hard time getting away from this Lakers matchup because the Clippers are projected for the most points of any team tonight. It's really just whether you think those big three of Paul, DeAndre, and Blake play – all of their allotted minutes. And I think that's my biggest concern is that the game gets out of hand. They haven't had to play these guys a ton. They do want to sort of manage them for the playoffs, not to say that their playoff seeding is set, but it's much more important for them to just get to the playoffs completely healthy than it is to maybe leapfrog the Jazz into the fourth spot, let's say. So
yeah, totally agree.
And so I just think that's my only concern with the Clippers. And I recognize that the line is only 8 and the Lakers have been able to stay in game. So I don't really know where I stand totally with this. This will be one the other thing that I'll probably spend a lot of time thinking about today. On the Lakers side, Clarkson's been playing. They've seen, you know, D'Angelo Russell's coming off a huge game. Who knows what their starting lineups are going to be or who they're going to play. But do you think there is value for a Laker team that they've been able to score in the short term? Are their minutes a little bit safer now? What do you think about the Lakers?
Well, Clarkson's crazy right now in terms of his overall minutes. Like, you and I had this discussion when he was moved into the starting lineup, and we were kind of like, now realistically, how many more minutes can Jordan Clarkson play over 34 minutes a game, right? Like, he was coming off the bench. What could really be the plan here with him? Well, now we know the plan. It's to play him 39 minutes a game. Like, when I was looking at Clarkson, I was like, yeah, but the Lakers have been in some crazy games recently. I bet his minutes are all over the place. The guy played 39 minutes in a 39-point loss to Houston.
Right.
So, like, the plan very obviously is, Jordan, you're the guy. You get the ball. Just like it's like a pickup basketball game where they think he's the best player on the team, so he's just out there while everyone else subs in around him. Doesn't matter what's going on. He's just going to, like, play his minutes because he came out to the court. I don't know what to make of that. Just, like, from a process level, like, no other team in the league plays that way. So who knows? But if Clarkson's really going to play 39, 40 minutes a game, it does seem like there's a considerable floor on the current pricing. I mean, given that this game is allegedly an 8.5-point game, yeah, that strikes me as dubious. But if that's really the case here, I think he's a good play. I think Julius Randle, another really interesting guy. The game rates to be pretty fast-paced. I don't really love him here. Like, he's just getting pretty expensive, and I get that he's been doing it recently with some frequency, but you'd be very unhappy with this price in 3 of his last 4 games. Like, against Denver, he scored 20 fantasy points. Man, with that kind of floor, I would not be excited to get him in anything less than an optimal matchup, and that's not what this feels like to me.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to have, like, the minute safety of a guy like Clarkson. Clarkson's been benefited from they've been running him and Russell together, which has helped. Like, they haven't just been swapping that point guard duty. Like, they played – I mean, they labeled D'Angelo Russell as the 2. That really wasn't totally the case last game. They were able to sort of swap those duties. But the fact that they're willing to play those guys together a lot more does keep Clarkson on the floor, and they just, like, don't really want to play Nick Young. Now, Nick Young did sit last game because he has a bellyache. But gastroenteritis, that's what a bellyache, right? Like, isn't that what
he felt a little gassy.
Yeah, felt a little gassy, and they just, like, they don't really want to play him anymore. I think some people might be able to talk themselves into Zubac here. If there's a game where this guy is just destined to have 3 fouls in the first 6 minutes, it's this game. So I would just really caution.
I was having heart pains last night just writing up the picks because I saw Zubac's name near the top of the center thing, and I was like, oh God, I'm going to text you at 8:30 tonight and be like, how's it looking? And you're going to be like,
I'm not playing that guy. You can absolutely cannot
insert
play that
some
guy.
Excuse why Zubac is not performing.
Well. Nope. There's no chance that this guy's going to see like at least cash game optimal lineup. The foul trouble is just too risky. He's just having to face off against some.
You don't like a guy who played 11 minutes against Houston as the starter 3 games ago.
Well, if you don't understand, like, if you're young and don't understand defensive rotations, especially on, like, pick and rolls, and you're dead against the Clippers. And, like, what you're and
right, he's just not enough. He's not smart enough, for instance, just to, like, stop when he's supposed to stop, or just, like, go straight up against Blake and DeAndre.
Yeah,
and it's going to be totally embarrassing. So I'm not, I mean, and he could go out there and just do 20-10. Like, let's
not for
let's
my cash games
there right now.
All right, we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. You can head over to the site now, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system that's powered by Lineup Lab, Optimal Lineups, NBA for FanDuel and DraftKings, or DraftKings, NHL projections as well. I'll be back again tomorrow doing a solo Wednesday pod. James will be back again Thursday talking more basketball. Buddy, I got it from here.
See ya. Would not want to be you.